Blog Talk Radio.
Healing rain is coming down. It's coming nearer to this old town. Rich and poor, weak and strong, it's bringing mercy. It won't be long. Healing rain is coming down. It's coming closer to the lost and found. Tears of joy and tears of shame are washed forever in Jesus' name.
Good morning, and welcome to the Monday edition of The Cross in the Desert, Speaking Hope and Freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy Noble. Welcome to part four of a live reading of my new book, The Cross in the Desert, Speaking Hope and Freedom to Iran. We're beginning today on page 44. Pamina's Painful Childhood. Pamina was just a young 8-year-old girl discovering the world when suddenly her life was violently interrupted by the Iranian Revolution in 1979. I asked Pamina to describe for me her early childhood in Iran. The following story is in her own words. My childhood was full of pain, sorrows, and suffering. I did not experience a real childhood at all. I learned to know war and strife while the other children around the world were playing with their balls and dolls. I learned to say, Tehran, down with this nation, while other children around the world were sharing love. In my childhood, my favorite young men who used to offer me bike rides, who played soccer near our house, suddenly one day disappeared. Their memories became photos, photos of martyrs, photos of gravestones, the gravestones of political prisoners. The melody of my childhood was the music of war, the sound of bullets killing the political prisoners in prison near our house at dawn. My childhood was full of war, bombs, bloodshed, and nightmares. During this time, one of the most frightening words that haunted me wherever I went was the word rape. How I wish I could enclose this word in a steel box and drop it in the deepest part of the ocean. I wish I could bury this word in the middle of the earth so that no other child, no other woman would ever have to experience it. According to the rules of Islam, if a virgin should die, she would immediately go to paradise. Many women opposed the rule of Khomeini and therefore prisoners. They were considered, quote, enemies of God, not deserving of paradise, but rather hell. In order to ensure their fate in hell, the women were raped in prison and then immediately executed. Now they could not go to paradise because they were no longer virgins. This was the evil punishment inflicted on them during the rule of Khomeini. The word raping is still in my dreams and in my nightmares. It seems to follow me wherever I go. My other nightmares as I grew up was running in fear from the Revolutionary Guard, who wanted to arrest me because my hijab did not cover all of my hair, and I was showing too much skin and did not dress according to the Islamic dress code. My childhood meant, don't listen to music. It meant, help your father bury his favorite books, cassette tapes, and photos of his dear friends, hiding it from the Revolutionary Guard. My childhood meant hide your Bible where no one can find it. It also meant to expect the Revolutionary Guard to break into your house for any reason. My childhood was full of tears, full of worries, full of sorrows, and full of sadness. In my early childhood, I learned that, quote, happiness is banned, joy is forgiven, and satisfaction is boycotted. Page 46, Pamina's New Life. 1 year ago, Pamina finally escaped from Iran and traveled to Malaysia, where she became a refugee. Shortly before she arrived, she had a powerful, life-transforming experience. Here's her story in her own words. For as long as I can remember, my life has been filled with despair. I was empty inside. I was searching for satisfaction and contentment everywhere that I could. At the age of 10, I had a dream of him. I didn't realize it at the time, but I loved him. There was something deep inside of me attracting me to him. I wanted to know him, but I didn't know who he was or where I could find him. In my dreams, I sensed him calling me, but I didn't know what to say. Yet whenever I was scared or sad, I'd find myself calling out to him. Many of my friends criticized me by saying, "Why do you call Jesus Christ? You have your own God. You have your own prophets and imams." Because of the fear and persecution, I had to read his holy book in secret. My parents supported and encouraged me. My father shared with me everything he knew and had read about Jesus. My mother faithfully prayed for me. I spent a lot of time wrestling with my questions about Islam, but they were never answered. I was never satisfied. I found my heart drawn to him and how he carried his cross and shed his blood for our salvation. Jesus never hurt anyone, and yet he was crucified in the cruelest of ways. He spent his life healing the sick, raising the dead, and then giving his life for our forgiveness. He was the source of love and grace. I will never forget the day Jesus finally opened the door for me and sent me to Malaysia. He blessed me with a family of caring and compassionate Christians. Suddenly, I found myself worshiping God for the first time without fear. Yet in all of my rejoicing, I was still confused. I was taught for years and years that Muslims cannot worship God in any other way. Muslims reject any notion that Jesus is God, saying it's the sin of shirk, and those who participate in this become apostates. In my desperation, I cried out to Jesus, "Oh Lord, you know that I love you. You know I want to serve you for the rest of my life, but can I still be a Muslim and serve you? Please show me the way. Give me a sign." Jesus answered me in a dream. I saw a man in white clothes. He asked me the directions to the church. I immediately understood the message. Soon afterwards, I was baptized. I washed my soul in water. Regeneration brought happiness and joy. My friends saw the immediate transformation in me. Almost immediately afterwards, the Lord began to train me. Many bad things began to happen to me: accidents, injuries, disease, failures. I knew that the Lord was molding and shaping me. He was testing my new faith. I remember reading a verse in the Old Testament, Malachi 3, verse 3, quote, "God will sit as a refiner and the purifier of silver." What did it mean? I found out that the silver refiner heats the pieces of silver. He turns up the heat until he is able to see his own face on that piece of silver. The verse meant to me that God brings hardships in our lives and trains and purifies us until he can see his spirit at work in our hearts. I was amazed at this. I said, "Thank you, Lord. I am ready for more pain. I can tolerate anything if it means that you love me." Now I patiently tolerate pain, and in the midst of it all, I have his joy. Now I write my problems with a pencil and God's greatness with a pen. I know that he will erase all of my problems with erasers made of power, greatness, grace, and blessing. Now I do not tell the Lord that I have great problems. Instead, I tell my problems that I have a great God. I want this miracle to happen to my whole family and friends. My prayer is that all Iranians will have this same wonderful experience of Jesus. Pamina is currently living with the church family of Christians in Malaysia and prays that very soon one day she will live in a free country. Stories of stealthy freedom. Quote, if the meat was covered, then the cats wouldn't roam around it. Taj al-Din Hilali, Muslim cleric. Quote, I cannot accept that my hair can make men sin and lose their faith unless they have a sick heart. Unquote. Iranian stealthy freedom woman. March 7th, 1979. The new leader of Iran, the Ayatollah Khomeini, decrees that it is mandatory for the woman to wear the hijab, the veil. One day later, on International Women's Day, thousands of Iranian women take to the streets of Tehran, launching a massive protest against wearing the hijab. Now, exactly 35 years later, a new silent protest has begun called My Stealthy Freedom. That is a little more obscure, and yet it's having profound effects on young Iranian women who are once again rebelling against the mandatory hijab law. Iranian journalist Masih Ahmadinejad, who lives in the UK, overwhelmed at the response she received when she asked Iranian women about their desires to be without the veil. The Stealthy Freedom Facebook page was bombarded with over 500,000 hits in 5 weeks, including pictures and stories of women without their veils. The word stealthy is used to describe the new revolution because of the danger and risk to women who participate in it. If they are caught, they can be lashed, fined, and imprisoned for disobeying the mandatory law. Therefore, in order to avoid the harsh consequences, they must secretly remove their veils. For some, removing the veil is a frightening and difficult choice. One Iranian woman who posted her picture of being hijabless and standing in front of the Azadi Towers in Tehran, described her journey to removing her veil publicly as a scary event. Quote, whenever I saw revolving lights or people dressed in uniforms, I would think it was the police and begin to shake with fear. Eventually, she gained more courage and decided not to let what people think or say bother her anymore. She began to ride her bicycle without the veil and ignored the judgmental stares given by women dressed in chadors. The history of the hijab is important to the context of understanding why Iran imposes this mandatory law. On January 8, 1936, the Shah banned the wearing of the veil and threatened arrest to women who defied the law. The law was enacted as an attempt to modernize and westernize Iran. On March 7, 1979, Ayatollah Khomeini reversed the law, making it mandatory for women to wear the hijab publicly. Iran had been transformed from a secular to a fundamentalist Islamic state in order to conform more closely to the teachings of the Quran. Fear and guilt tactics have been employed by mullahs and clerics in order to manipulate the thinking of women in relationship to wearing the veil. One such Muslim cleric, Taj al-Din Hilali, publicly declared, quote, if the meat was covered, the cats wouldn't roam around it, end quote. Hilali characterized women about the veil, without the veil, as being like uncovered meat, implying they would be responsible for gang rapes by Muslim men. In response to this sick implication, I love what the Iranian woman in the Stealthy Freedom Movement says, quote, I cannot accept that my hair would make men sin and lose their faith unless they have a sick heart, in which case they need to seek a remedy in their own souls instead of making us keep covered, end quote. Another example of the ridiculous superstition surrounding the wearing of the veil is the statement of what a clergyman said on the Iranian TV, quote, that a woman's bad hijab is the cause of thunderstorms and floods. Well, a brave and courageous woman, outraged at this statement, picture of her standing in front of a dried-up riverbed without wearing her veil, looking up to the sky and begging for it to begin raining. Despite the consequences and the fear and guilt tactics employed by the Iranian regime, women are standing up fearlessly in their pictures and stories in order to say to the world, I am a woman. I am more than just a veil. One such Iranian woman praised Masih Ahmadinejad in a personal letter on her Stealthy page, declaring, quote, thank you for creating a page that has given us a chance to be seen by the people of Iran and the people of the rest of the world. I, like most of the generation, wish not only for the day when I will have freedom of clothing, but also the day when Iran will be a free country. These chains we bear are never something that we have chosen for ourselves. 2 years ago, I wrote a very important book called The Rose of Nowruz, Dreams of Hope and Freedom, in which I described a woman freedom fighter living in Iran named Behera, who finally broke her silence and stood up against the oppressive government. There is a very poignant scene in Chapter 2 where Behera is waiting for the bus to take her home from Tehran University, and while she waits patiently, she composes a declaration that I think perfectly describes the inner cries and convictions of women in the Stealthy Freedom Movement. Quote, I am a woman. I am more than just a veil. I am more than what I wear. I am someone. Someone who has the right to speak her mind, the right to be heard, the right to pursue her dreams, the right to be respected, and the right to be treated as an equal. God has given me all of these rights, and no man or government can take these rights away from me. I am a woman, and I proclaim my right to be free. I am more than just a veil. I am a woman. I am more than just a veil. I am more than what I wear. I am someone. The Rose of Nowruz. 2 years ago, I had the privilege of writing a very special book on the rights of women for my Iranian friends entitled The Rose of Nowruz, Dreams of Hope and Freedom. My dear friend Atifi, who lives in Tehran, shared her powerful stories with me that became the basis of the storyline for my book. Since its publication, The Rose of Nowruz has been read by prominent human rights groups in both Canada and Iran, including my dear friends who live in the heart of the Islamic Republic. Just recently, I asked Atifi to write a short, personal reflection on the treatment of women in Iran. She happily agreed. I want you to read, word for word, her feelings and convictions. My Iranian friend is an English teacher and has an amazing gift of describing from her heart the way of life in the Islamic Republic of Iran. The following short paragraph is her latest story, reflecting on the treatment of women in Iran. The word sounds familiar to many people around the world, but for me, that's not tangible. I would love to feel it one day. If I get the chance, and I hope no woman in the world feels the insecurity I'm coping with here. Everywhere else, women are praised for their beauty, all the sacrifices they do for the family, and for bringing life into the world. But here, when it comes to women, there are no rights, no values. Women are things which must be used. The worst thing about this inequality is that you have to feel it every day from the bottom of your heart. The simplest example that I can mention is standing at a street corner waiting for a taxi. Just because of standing there, every cab driver or motorcyclist feels free to honk the horn, stop next to you, and begin flirting with you, saying nasty things to you. It is a reminder that every day you are being treated like an object created to make life full of pleasure for men. It really doesn't matter whether or not you are single or married, well-dressed or not, having a complete hijab or not. What I'm describing happens to every Iranian woman every single day. It is very devastating to experience being watched and harassed from the moment that you leave home until the time that you arrive at your destination. They feel free to whisper whatever dirty and nasty things that they wish. They feel free to comment on your face and body and even the minute things that you never noticed in the mirror. Narrating and elaborating this issue really makes me sick of being a woman here. I bet you could never tolerate a single day here. While it's true that in my culture, flirting and harassment of women is also a problem, in Iran, it's a way of life resulting from the teachings of the Quran and the Hadith. Some of my Muslim friends insist the Quran is a book that highly praises the equality of women, but when carefully read, it contains statements that seem to teach quite the opposite. For example, Surah chapter 2, verse 223 declares, quote, Your women are your fields, so go into your fields whichever way you like, unquote. Think back on my friend's description of the harassment and flirting of men. It is now understandable why she is treated this way in everyday life. This verse from the Quran essentially is giving permission for the man to treat his wife in a lewd, sexual, and vulgar way. Another example, Surah chapter 4, verse 11 states, quote, The share of a male shall be twice that of a female. The Quran is very clearly teaching that when it comes to the issue of inheritance rights, the man is preferred over that of a woman. One more example, the Hadith, the collection of the sayings and the deeds of the Prophet, volume 1, book 6, number 301, quote, The Prophet said, Isn't the witness of a woman equal to half that of a man? The women said, Yes. He said, quote, This is because of the deficiency of a woman's mind, unquote. You can now clearly feel and understand why my dear Iranian friends suffer from this type of abuse and harassment every day. Adafi's culture has been taught that men are superior to women, and they are permitted to treat them as mere sexual objects. Instead of treating women with dignity, honor, and respect, men engage in perverse behavior and treat them as mere possessions for their amusement and entertainment. This is the cultural mindset that my dear friends have to cope with every day. In contrast to the Quran, the Bible portrays women with dignity and respect as image bearers of God, passion, and kindness by Jesus during his earthly ministry. In the Jewish culture, women suffered from much of the same treatment, and Jesus came on the scene treating women with the worth and dignity that they were deserved. Proverbs 31, verse 10, is a perfect example of showing high praise to the value and worth of a woman. The writer King Lemuel asks the question, An excellent life, who can find? She is far more precious than jewels. Verse 25, she is clothed with strength and dignity. Verse 26, when she speaks, her words are wise, and she gives instruction with kindness. Life is hard for women in Iran. They are daily scrutinized by the morality police, making sure they are wearing their hijabs properly, and if not, they can be arrested and fined. In my book, I describe this in much more detail. My heart goes out to my dear Iranian friend. Adafi needs to be treated with dignity and respect. Women are not possessions, rather they are image bearers of God, of great worth and value, that deserve to be treated with tenderness and kindness. God, not government, defines the value and worth of a woman. She is much more than just a veil. The precious gift of freedom. And you will know the truth. And the truth will set you free. Jesus, John, verse chapter 8, verse 32. In the movie Braveheart, there is an incredibly emotional execution scene where William Wallace, the famous Scottish freedom fighter, played by Mel Gibson, is being tortured before a crowd of onlookers. The executioner taunts and begs Wallace to submit to the King of England and beg for mercy. Tired and exasperated, Wallace looks up at the executioner and adamantly refuses and instead gives a death cry toward the audience yelling, Freedom! Freedom. Freedom is at the core of who we are as human beings. We fight, we struggle, we speak out for the right to be free. Another famous person of history, Patrick Henry, a statesman and promoter of the American Revolution, proclaimed, Give me liberty or give me death. That's how important this seven-letter word is to our existence. I have a precious friend named Nahid who lives in Tehran, Iran. She is a dedicated English teacher and works very hard at instructing children. Recently, I received an emotional and angry email from her. Like other Iranians, she is struggling to survive in a culture of fear and oppression where personal freedom is non-existent. My friend laments in an anger and an outrage. I feel we won't have a free country. I know that we won't. In this country, every single action is monitored by the government. It is ridiculous. We should ask the government's permission if we want to die. I hate this government. Nahid continues in another outburst of emotional frustration. I feel we are like animals who are living in a box, and when they need us to grow, they feed us, and when we won't eat, we are imposed to die. I want to shout everywhere. I want all people to know. I hate this government. I want you to think about the words of my friend Nahid. In an emotional outburst, she is crying out for freedom. Like every Iranian I talk to every day, they have hopes and dreams for a new life of prosperity, a new life of purpose. But in Iran, they feel completely oppressed, and they feel completely captivated by a government who limits and monitors their every move. And so when you hear this cry of desperation from my friend Nahid, you can understand for the first time what it's like to live in Iran. When I read my book, I hope that you sense and feel this frustration, this desperation from my dear friends. It has been a pleasure once again to read to you. We're going to stop here today after finishing my story about Nahid and the precious gift of freedom. And we're going to pick it up next time with my friend Mehrnoush's story, her prison of fear. I want to thank you so much for being on the cross in the desert today. God bless you, and I will see you very soon again for another reading of my new book, The Cross in the Desert, Speaking Hope and Freedom to Iran. God bless you. See you very soon.
Healing rain is coming down. Hey.